For this time of the Dharma talk, if you would like to move closer, feel free. And also, we received a note of someone who would like translation into Hebrew, but we don't know who the person is. So whether you left the note or not, Tamiji will translate. So if you want translation into Hebrew during the talk, you can gather in that corner. Also, feel free to stop me, interrupt me, and say what? What does that mean? Even if you speak better English than I do, feel free to ask. I wish for this time. How's the sound, by the way? It's okay? I wish for this time to have a kind of informality while talking about the most important things. So if we could kind of cultivate living where we talk about the most important things, not just once or twice, but regularly, letting a conversation develop. And the word develop, not in the way we use it now, where people are building things they shouldn't build in places that shouldn't have buildings on them. But to develop is to uncover, to open the envelope, to open the veil. I was in Finland in November for a retreat, and I was surprised that there was no snow on the ground. I imagined that they had snow from maybe September until May or something. But there was no snow on the ground. There were the trees and the boulders from the ice age, you know, left there, and moose prints and moss, but no snow. And then one afternoon, there was the most beautiful snow, like big fat flakes spiraling, like you couldn't not dance with it. And it was the first snow of the season. I couldn't believe I was in Finland, the first snow. And I wasn't the only one excited. It was so surprising. And then it snowed again, and it was like little tiny bits, but like in a diagonal straight line. Pum, 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 pum. Hardly leaving a mark. And then the last morning, it looked foggy to me. Like there was this white, looked like a fog coming through the trees, and they were like, no, that's snow too. So we often repeat that thing of people, the snow. Oh dear, here we go again. However many words they have for snow. But to actually be with people who live in the snow, well, it's the first snow, the second snow, and the third snow, and they're all completely different. One of them not even recognizable as snow to me. I'd like for us to have experience after experience of dialogue about what matters, so that it's just regular, not special, and still important. So if we can play around with, like, yeah, being relaxed so that you can be here and not like the special Dharma talk that is or isn't up to your expectations, that you do or don't understand, and oh no, or oh yes. But just a regular conversation about the most important things In India, I like to imagine that we'd be in a chai stall together, having tea. With a certain, different kind of time that we used to feel when we were in India, some of us, a few decades ago. So watch out for the way that we are associating retreat with schedule so much. The feeling that if we can follow the schedule or not follow the schedule means we can meditate or not meditate. No. To meditate is to be timeless. So please use the schedule. It's like a shoehorn. You know this thing? It's like a very simple technology to slide your foot into a shoe that you might not own. Those kind of more stiff shoes that you might need help for the foot to go in. So we can use the schedule on retreat to help us come out of time. Come into timelessness. Come into at least possibility, openness to the possibility of flow or a different way of being moved that you don't understand. Does it make sense? Does it make sense? Does it sound interesting? Doesn't have to. Just because a few people are saying yes, you can be like, no. I want to understand why I moved. That could be equally valid. It came to mind today the importance, how important the basics are. And I knew that, okay, that's the Dharma talk today. We're going to talk about the basics. And then someone came to talk one-to-one saying oh my God, I don't even know the basics after 4 years of lots of retreats. And I was like, good. That's good. Because the basics are really slippery. What is a thought? Do you know? What is a body? Does anybody know what a body is? What is a state of mind? What is it made of? Who has it? I mentioned yesterday that I think a better word for mindfulness would be remembrance or remembering, to remember. And it's also a more straight translation from smriti or sati, in case you were asleep yesterday. The Sanskrit word is smriti. I mean, I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it perfectly, smriti, and sati in Pali. It means to remember. I think that Gautam Buddha was a little bit poking fun at people in his day who were memorizing texts. And he was saying, let's talk about remembering stuff. What kind of remembering is worthwhile? That's my, I think. I think he had a good sense of humor, actually. A little dry. They say, some people, some of the texts say that he never smiled more than like a slight lift on the two sides, like not showing the teeth. I think he had a dry sense of humor. What kind of remembering would be transformative, would be a resolution of suffering? Would be a worthwhile answer to the question, like, what is life or what is worthwhile? And yesterday also, I think, or was it this morning, talking about considering your ongoing flow of experience to be like an ecosystem. I don't like the word ecosystem because it sounds like a bit mechanical. We're coming from a more mechanical culture, looking at the nature we can't live without and are part of and calling it an ecosystem. It's not quite right, but anyway. Remembrance would be like in an ecosystem, so in an ecological family or niche. Do you know that word niche? Niche, niche. Area. Maybe an area has suffered, whether from chemicals or lightning or fire or flood or the trees getting cut down or whatever. Or maybe we can feel the ecosystem we're in and what's all going on here. Or some of what's going on here. There's some things lacking, out of balance, some things happy, growing. In a lot of places where things have gone wrong, gotten out of balance, gotten hurt, leaving it alone allows so much to happen, so much healing. So leaving it alone means not further interference, not neglect, but just not further interference. So in ourselves, could we notice the difference between listening and responding to needs that we find and interference upon interference? And being inspired by the world that we are not separate from. Like in Chernobyl. The nature is taken over again. There's big cats, I can't remember what kind of wild cats, big ones, walking around. So if we have in mind and in heart that it might not take much, the effort might be leaving room for life to move, more so than trying to fiddle around, more so than importing an exotic species to try to control a problem. I think we've done that enough times now, that we don't need to repeat that experiment. So applying that internally, if we can filter already when we're listening, so you're listening to Adelia G and I giving some suggestions, you've read, maybe you've heard, maybe ideas about what you could do. Feeling whether it's an alien species or whether there's a feeling of some resonance or family or, oh yeah, like remembering. Oh yeah, that kind of tree used to grow here. When I was little, I used to pray. I forgot about that. When I was little, I used to look at the clouds. I forgot about that. When I was little, I used to climb trees or whatever. And a lot of the texts, and in India, for example, there's so many holidays, religious holidays, that commemorate someone's discovery of what helps them. There's one in January where somebody found it helpful to be standing in the cold river. And his enlightenment occurred there, and there's a holiday for him. Everybody gets the day off. And isn't it great that the whole country celebrates a day that someone got enlightened? There's also Buddha Purnima. It's a holiday. But it doesn't necessarily mean that by standing in the river or sitting or maybe lying under the tree is going to help you in that deep way. It might be a fun experience. It might give you something to grow with or on towards a momentum of discovering rather than importing exotic species, rather than copying somebody else. So we can copy as a way of permission, trying it on. How does this wake something up that's already in me? Or am I trying to cover up what's already in me? Or kind of twist it to make it look better? Given decent conditions, living systems or families of life can really recover, which might be another way of thinking about remembering, recovery. In ways that it can be hard to understand. How is it possible that the mountain lions are coming back in that forest in California? Where did those frogs come from that are coming back? Wildflowers that had been thought extinct or hadn't been seen in such a long time, the fields left alone because of mad cow disease, there they are. So a lot of our effort is to stop stomping on ourselves. It's not a small effort to stop being mean to ourselves. To stop overusing what we are. To stop trying to grow only one kind of thing. However good that crop is, if it's only one, I'm not sure it's going to be sustaining. However good peace or joy or clarity, if we're trying to grow only one crop, not sure about that. It sounds more like a plan than a discovery. Maybe in trying to grow more peace, we come across some species and states of mind that we don't recognize, or that we recognize from so long ago. And maybe giving room to that. not necessarily just trying to rip it up and throw it away. There are some mind states that different religious and spiritual traditions have been talking about for thousands of years that now the science is saying, yeah, that's good for us. To feel grateful, it's good for you. To be generous, it's good for you. So we can try that on purpose, feel how it feels, and then let that be what sprouts the native gratefulness and generosity, leaving the idea behind and letting it come forth. So there can be that little bit of doing it on purpose, faking it till you make it kind of thing, a little bit to try it on, to have permission, to resonate with something that's maybe deep in the soil of you, and then letting what's deep in you grow. Similarly, in the yoga sutras, in the yoga text, the original lines about breathing as part of yoga. It doesn't say breathe in for 3 seconds or 5 or 50 seconds and then breathe out for 50 seconds. It just says, notice how is your breathing when you feel good. When you're feeling kind of quiet, that breath, try that. So we can play with the fact that in our ecosystem, breathing and mind state go together. They interact. They mutually influence. But first, let's notice what's native. When you feel good, when you feel peaceful, for example, even a little bit of quiet, or that one time that you remember feeling quiet ever, whatever you think is true, that time. What kind of breath might have been going on then? Or if you kind of bring it on through memory, that time. And letting your eyes rest and just letting the breath come. You don't need to imagine intensively with your eyes. And letting the breath reorient the mind. In the yoga text, Patanjali, it says this is a good way to set yourself up to go deeper. And then different people have found different kinds of breathing that helped them regulate or helped them in whatever way. But find your way. Why not? Or there's a monk who says, just what about give yourself the most delicious breath that you can come up with? And because he's a monk, we can be like, oh, okay, right. It's valid. Even the permission to do that might make a little difference, but then actually doing it might make a little more of a difference. Even one cycle. How about three? But what comes before, okay, that's nice, like letting the breath bring us back towards peace, towards feeling okay, even though there's so much that's not okay, feeling okay as well. What then comes possible is that we're really absorbed in something. We're not distracted. We're not outgoing. We're really into something. So part of the coming to basics and talking about mindfulness as remembering, there can be confusion about what concentration is. When I hear the word, I almost would get a headache. Like, there's so much head energy for me associated with the word concentration. Like, whoa. So far from meditation. So how about you? It might not be true for you, but just checking. And maybe we can kind of recover the word, because it's kind of a beautiful word in a way. To be with the center, or to be centered with, or to be with and center. It's beautiful. So a breath that you might remember from that time you felt well, bringing it on, letting that kind of tug, give a little tug for your mind to come back to remember, oh yeah, remember by embodying. Okayness. Not to think that you're already in deep meditation, but you're preparing in a natural development, unveiling deeper meditation. The next thing that could happen that we come to the lip of with some good, delicious breath is that the mind happily wants to be all in for a while, to be whole for a while. And it's juicy. And it's flow. And then it's almost as if it would hold us rather than us trying to hold to it, can hold us. So try it. So if our inner life, so-called inner life, which includes a lot that's outside of us, but if it's a lot about remembrance, and a lot of remembrance is allowing a natural recovery that happens through remembering to stop interfering, to stop stomping. To let resources and capacities that we don't understand or know about take place. And that's often, I'm gesturing, and you might not have your eyes open or you might not be able to see me very well, but it's often from behind and below coming around. More like this, rather than reaching forward and up to try to get something, we're stopping the interference, we're stopping importing alien species, could be giving up on that hope tension. Oh well, maybe I won't get enlightened by standing in the cold river. Oh well, didn't quite click. Maybe it's good, but maybe it's not enlightenment for me. I love a cold river, personally. And then it's as if we could be wrapped slowly and subtly from behind and below by our own resources that we didn't recognize as our own, by our own capacities, like a field that we stopped putting too many cows on and the wildflowers came up. So what might be some decent enough conditions that could help this remembering, this recovering? What are some basics? that support remembering, a process of recovery. Coming back to a natural alignment that it then is a flourishing. Isn't it interesting? Like that by being quiet, so much flourishing can happen. It's that time of year. I recognize because where I am on the other end of the Mediterranean, we're not there yet. I know in a month or two, all those dandelion greens that are going to be, all that green that's going to be. So how about giving yourself ground? A practice of feeling, what might that be for you? What that, might that mean for you? It's a word that gets thrown around, and sometimes I'm not really sure what we're talking about. So don't assume that we know what we're talking about yet. What could ground be? How's the English so far if you're not having tummy juice? Is it okay? Or in anything you want me to repeat or translate or... Okay, what's recovery in Hebrew? Achlamach. Achlama. Achlama. And there was also shlema, I heard. Shikung. Okay, good. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. What were they? Oh, ripui. Ripui. For me, ground could be, for some of us, that way that I'm starting the two meditations so far when I've given instructions of just feeling heaviness, feeling gravity. It could also be like getting on the ground. It could also be like letting your body get on the ground the way your body wants to get on the ground, which might be sitting up, but you're a mountain or a tree or a rock or whatever. What I'm going to be suggesting as elements of support for recovery, for remembrance, coming back together. They're, in a way, different versions of belonging. So we always have weight. There is always gravity. That's how our bodies have evolved, like we live with gravity, and gravity has us as their as its guest. But we don't always feel that. Sometimes it's hard to feel the heaviness because we're so or what body, you know, body, what body? I think there's a connection between the simple, literal connection to the ground and feeling our weight and feeling the contact. And even playing with these, you know, sometimes a little bit going a little farther kind of things that I say, like, what if the earth welcomes you? What if the earth loves to feel your weight the way you would love to hold, you know, a cat or a dog or whatever? That we don't need to earn a place. We don't have to prove anything to be allowed to be here. We don't have to be like the others to be allowed to be here. Those are all more subtle elements of that we can, I think, grain by grain, start to recover, like remind our being that, yeah, how could you not belong? It's not like you made yourself up. And you're the one who's different from everybody else. of course, you are different from everybody else, but in the same way that everybody is different from everybody else. There's no escape from belonging, but our experience for many people, especially nowadays, is for sure not belonging. Or if belonging, then at a cost that I am not willing to pay. I think that's an important step to play around with. A permission to be here as you are. And that you being here as you are gives something to us. That it doesn't take something from you. Even though that might be true, we often come into a sense of community or group with the feeling like, I don't want to be here because if I'm here, they're going to make me do something. They're going to make me be like them, or they're going to whatever. It can't, you know, it's hard to accept or believe or trust that really we could be here as we are. So playing, like trying that on and feeling where maybe in a childlike place, it's like, yeah, of course. In the childlike place. Does it make sense? Maybe imagining yourself as a child or seeing a child or as like a young animal, like a puppy. That's just like, there's no question about belonging, like the puppies, you know, there's the wiggling that they have. And they just will come. We have a meditation hall in South India that doesn't have walls. And in January when we had retreats, this puppy season, and the puppies would come, like it or not. Some people liked it, some people not. They had no question of like, well, warm body, And don't do that to each other here, please. Don't, but inside yourself. For now, off retreat, make a space where that would be lovely, you know, not here. So sometimes, if it's possible to feel a little bit of the weight of your body, maybe now, maybe another time, and then you could play with, if you want, maybe sometimes to exaggerate that a little bit more, go with it, like let that, as if it's like melting ice. Well, that I can feel that part of my, I can feel there's pressure, so that must mean there's weight. It's like thawing. What would be that? How would you say thaw? To thaw. Lechamis. Shir. One more? What was it? Are there three words for everything in Hebrew? To thaw? Like if something is frozen and it starts to become warm. Anyway, that's what thawing is. So. Remembering, thawing. Another metaphor for remembering. Where it's possible to feel a little bit of weight, even if you're kind of guessing, like I can tell because there's some pressure on my butt where it must be apparently meeting the cushion, but I have my eyes closed, so I'm not sure. But in my actual experiential experience, I can feel like a squishing. There's pressure. I guess that means there's weight, and kind of hang out there and get to know what you can feel. And then maybe sometimes that starts to spread a little bit. That's another part of remembering. Does it make sense? Yeah, of course. So I'm going in detail where someone might not feel their body really. They might not feel the heaviness of their body. But maybe they can kind of deduce, like guess. I guess that's a feeling of pressure on my butt, where I guess my butt is in contact with the cushion. Seems like that must be pressure because it's kind of squished feeling, compressed. okay, but I have my eyes closed. I don't need to, you know, figure it out. Let me just receive these sensations. And then maybe that feeling of pressure, if I hang out there and let that be enough, the enoughness of just that, the friendliness with just that, that might spread a little bit. It's a little bit like also sunrise, like the light just spreads. So it might spread a little bit. I feel more variations in the pressure. Like it's different where there's the bone and where there's the muscle or the fat and the skin, the layers, the clothing. It starts to develop. It unveils. And then it might spread a little bit more to where there's kind of a permission, an inner permission, that at least in this little local part of this ecosystem, that maybe is a feeling of weight, like heaviness weight. And we might in our head say, oh, that's so basic. But that's wonderful. That's real. And then it may or may not, it might disappear. Like we got so excited and then hopeful and then what's the body? Where's the body? But still, when something is real and it develops, it from one step to the next takes off an envelope, it's revealed a little bit more. We're a little bit more in touch with reality. There's a kind of timeless quality to that. And so we could even revisit that in memory. Sometimes we can kind of climb back into, okay, there was the pressure, and then, oh yeah, there was that nice, almost like a bread loaf feeling or shape. There's a simpleness and sometimes a simple goodness in just that. And if we don't come from the head, feel free to come in if you want. If we don't come from the head saying it's not enough, it's too basic, like that's the thing to keep wiping away. The idea that being more sophisticated is going to help in some way. That's only more defense that we're going to have to take apart later. It's like bringing in that species that's going to end up being the problem. So, okay, that's our situation. We keep wiping it away. Let it be maybe the waves of breath, like waves on the sand. It comes smooth, comes smooth, comes smooth. The thought that it's not right, it's not enough. But then the experience is good. There's a goodness that's not like right or wrong. And it might not even be about super pleasant, but there's a goodness that's very generous. Does that make sense? So I'm just going in slow motion along about ground. Sometimes we can feel a bit of weight after a while and a bit of volume after a while. And sometimes not. That's okay. But sometimes there is a bit of feeling of gravity. And with that can sometimes come almost a feeling of like spreading out a little bit and sinking down a little bit into the ground. And that's a real thing. That's not your imagination. And it feels good, usually. Everybody's different, but it usually is like, when we kind of just slightly recognize, not thinking about it, but like, oh yeah, there's that lovely spreading, sinking feeling. And no, nothing, just that. Being allowed to enjoy the goodness of this, of the simplicity. So that could be part of ground. There are also like a little bit more maybe mental but can be helpful things to play with ground, just like noticing that we actually are in an ecosystem now and always. And being in it and just checking how is that. You You might want to feel as if you could feel from your back. Again, like from behind and below, feeling the ecosystem. It might sound strange, but just feel free to play with that. To receive where we actually are physically in the world, but not trying to do it from here, and not even trying to do it from back down here, but like opening back and down, being where we are, what happens? Being in, participating. Okay, and if that doesn't work for you, sometimes like a simple reflection of where you are and who's giving you breath, those trees, etc., can be surprisingly juicy. There's like a 2-minute practice of choosing a plant or tree, some kind of green being, with your eyes open, breathing, and it's a mental reflection that you are, while you're breathing and feeling your breath, you're reflecting on how that particular tree is actually breathing out the oxygen that you need. It actually is. And you're actually breathing that in. So it's a reflection, but you're kind of realizing that it's also true. Bridging from the mental to the mysterious, really. And also you are breathing out what that tree is actually needing. So human beings are actually part of something wholesome sometimes. Wow. 2 minutes with your eyes open and a tree. And I've every time I've done that, I've been surprised. It's an exercise from Joanna Macy, who is sage, still living, who talks about the great turning, deep ecology and the great turning, where the culture might have a chance to recover in a way that could sustain life. So feel free to try that. I've been so surprised every time I do it, even though it's happened every time, that the friendliness with that particular piece of grass or that tree, like the appreciation, the tenderness. So might not be for you, but might be nice. Are there any questions or anything to share? I have to get in there again. It's not quite the same. Yes, please, Leif. Yes. Ah. Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Yeah. Cool. Thank you. Yeah.
What if the ground sensation is unpleasant?
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience?
Sometimes just the weight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that like when you're arriving and settling in, or after a while in a meditation? Mm-hmm. Where do you feel it more often? Mm-hmm. Okay, when you're sitting up? Okay. There could be some mechanical things to play with. So that could be, for example, sitting a little higher. It could be having a different thing to sit on, maybe a little softer. The sitting higher would be, or sitting in a way that you're giving a little bit more of your weight to your legs rather than only through the butt. Um, Do you see how that is? I actually need it too. So sometimes after a while, if we're kind of into the quiet, also lying down, there can be something that is painful or uncomfortable. And sometimes it's uncomfortable, but the meditative quality, the being kind of held in spaciousness or lightness or whatever, is it's like a different channel. And so that as if the radio is on, there's another radio on another station, but we can hear the station of spaciousness and be of, what's spaciousness in Hebrew? Like, Neruvachut, Revua, yeah, okay, Mechab. Spaciousness is a word I would like to know in Hebrew. Mechab. So let's say it could happen that we're in joy or in spaciousness, and then sometimes lying down on your back, especially the back of your head, might hurt even if you're on a soft mattress. It doesn't seem to be only about the surface. So sometimes there can be mechanical things that can help, and other times it's not necessarily. It might be energy, or it might just be, well, yeah, just like you're meditating a long time, it's really juicy and you got to pee. And it is for a while, it's fine, and then you got to go pee eventually. but let's say we're in a spacious deliciousness, delicious spaciousness, merhab, yofi. And this is hurting. Sometimes it's just lovely that it doesn't matter that it hurts a bit. And especially when it's a familiar sensation, you know you're not harming yourself. So be aware of that, because sometimes people are sitting through pain and they regret it either today or 20 years from now. People who are into sitting and then hurt their knees, and they didn't notice it when they were 20, but they notice it when they're 40. So this sensation at the back of the head seems to be maybe more of an energy thing when you're lying on your back, if you lie on your back. And sometimes it hurts, but it's fine because this is so yofi, so good, so beautiful. And sometimes then it becomes distracting. And in the case of this particular sensation, which I'm giving an example because it happens to some people sometimes and not just me, just like slightly moving the head to one side for a moment seems to release something. And then you can leave your head there or bring it back. And sometimes that movement doesn't disturb the spaciousness or the meditative energy or the meditative, let's say, frequency, radio station, whatever. Yeah. You're saying that it's usually a feeling of pressure, right? Is that what you said? Yeah. It comes right away. Okay. You put something under your knees?
Yeah.
Under your heels as well? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you could try, if you can find stuff, to go under the knees and the heels as well, so that the heels might be even a little higher than the knees and then higher than the hips. And it might be worthwhile doing some more like forward bend stretches. Maybe Odelia has some good yoga ideas for you. But it sounds like it could be some forward bending during the day, some hip stretching during the day. When I would sit, I definitely needed to do hip stretches and qigong during the day for my back and my everything to be okay for sitting. And then I got permission to lie down, which works better for me, so...
Sitting down or even standing is much more productive.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it keeps on coming.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a shock for me. What's your
excuse? Yeah. Do you want to say a word to finish your sentence, or?
You know, I'm just raising it up, knowing that I will have the answer soon. You know, kind of that's part of the game here, because I like lying down very much, and I enjoy it, and I do, and it is effective. Is not productive from I do gain some more wisdom which serve my life, but it's a hard one.
Yeah,
it's really a hard one.
Yeah, so you're saying you find lying down is fruitful, but this belief about sitting or stand, being up, being erect and upright, is more productive, is a hard one. Is that what you're saying?
That's kind of the rumors.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and books are full with it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you know, it's kind of that's the supportive environment, and that's why I kind of was very curious to come to this workshop.
Yeah.
Or retreat, because I'm ready to.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So, exactly. The belief that holding something up with effort will be productive, or is what is productive. Then we can check in our experience what kind of productive is it. It's a little bit like... There is a limited production that can happen because it's happening mentally. When I'm sitting, there's more access to a mental clarity. And I'm not saying we can't access deeper clarity sitting, but especially now that sitting is a work posture, it's exactly a posture of productivity. To come out of the whole business deal into life, which is not a business, is... something. It is. There's a gap. There's a shift that is practice. That's what practice is that shift out of the quantifying and the measurable into, in each our own ways, our experience of the immeasurable. So who am I betraying when I give up my productivity? What am I producing? If we have, and then this we can really again come to the ecosystem. So a factory is supposedly productive. What is it producing? We have to take in account everything. What is it producing? It's producing heat and smoke and chemicals. It's producing plastic, and it's producing something that is not even food, but it's labeled as food, let's say. That's considered productivity. And the more packaging, the more productive we consider it. That's going to last a long time, but do we want that plastic wrapper to last? Like, is that helpful? Just because it's given authority? So what I had wanted to, I'll just jump to, we'll continue whenever I give my next talk, and other elements that can be supportive for our recovering and remembering. Maybe I'll even just say them. So I think that ground is one, and we've gone into a lot of detail about that, and also connection, which can include nourishment, a quality that's nourishing, and also ventilation. So ground, connection, space, merha, Merhav. 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 And then being moved. So curiosity or adventure, courage or trust. So what did those elements allow to happen? They allow us a receptivity to aliveness. When we are receptive to aliveness, I'm almost finished. I know it's long. So, when we are receptive to aliveness, to reality, what happens? So we could say, when we rest, what happens? Or we could say, when we are creative, what happens? We're receptive to aliveness. That doesn't mean we're necessarily excited. There can be the ground and the nourishment that's sustainable and sustaining. What happens? So when you had a creative thing happen, whether it was an idea or whatever it was, how did that happen? Or if you have a practice of creativity, what is that when you are creative? So I'm an artist also, and when I'm speaking, for me, it's also part of my art as well as Dharma. To me, it's not really so different. It's not different. But when something comes through, it's a gift to me. A great idea came through. I can't take credit for that. I can recognize I love the quality of that idea. I'm happy to share it. At the same time, what is our role in creativity? Because if I'm not present there, I'm not appreciating that and enjoying that great idea and enjoying sharing that great idea, letting life share it through me. So we have a role, but it's not the role that we think we should have. Something comes and we enjoy and recognize and appreciate, wow, wow. I think that's, if that's not productive, it's better than productivity for me. And so I understand, like, the belief system in the measurable and the ownable and the brandable. That's the belief system. And so trusting, giving ourselves our own experience and letting that make an impression on us. Like, what does it feel like when I'm productive according to those laws? And what does it feel like when life produces something, like it develops an idea? It gives me that. Even when it's an idea to give something away, it's so juicy. It feels good. And it feels good partly because it's so unexpected, so not calculable.
Alive.
Yes, alive. And it takes time to get into the mood for that adventure. As a sustainable and sustaining way of living. Another way to say it simply is we're used to surviving and we long for living, but we're afraid. We're used to surviving, we long for living, and we're afraid. And we don't see other people doing it, so even more so. Who would, you know, like, yeah, but the evidence is clear. And taking that in. So practice makes us more available to feel our own experience and be shaped and moved and stilled and nourished by that, inspired by that. Yep.
The evidence is clear.
The evidence is clear the difference, the contrast between, let's say in meditation, I'm trying to, I think I have too many thoughts, I'm trying to make them stop. Because someone told me, or probably they didn't, but I think I have the impression that that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm angry at my thoughts. I'm angry at myself for not being the right kind of meditator or not having the right kind of mind or whatever, and I'm aware of the quantity of thoughts. And I'm focused on the quantity of thoughts. I'm not allowing myself to be interested in where are those coming from? Whose thoughts are these? What is a thought? So the evidence is clear in that when I'm meditating according to quantity in a quantifiable kind of mode, in a business mode, in a survival mode, in a defense mode, in an angry at life mode, in a hiding mode, how is that? And when it so happens, whether you call it meditation or not, maybe it's you're like, oh, got to get out of the hall. Thank goodness, some fresh air. Let me get away from all these people and just see the sky. Or thank goodness, whatever, you know, everybody's different. We're in touch with aliveness, reality. We're not counting. We're aware of it being a gift. And how's that? Does that make sense? Thank you, everyone. Thank you for your patience and your practice. I really feel that dignity of you and your path. And thank you for letting each other be each other, not you, and not according to your rules. That freedom that we can give each other is important. And then it bounces back, washes back to you also. The freedom to be in your way. Okay, thank you. Toda rabah.